principles of the revolution since last 44 years. To mark the anniversary, huge rallies are held every year in Kashmir and Ladakh regions, manifesting allegiance to the Islamic Revolution. People from all walks of life participate in these rallies that symbolize standing against the hegemonic powers and support for the oppressed of the world. The revolution has helped people unite, cutting across different sections to fight for their rights and demand freedom from oppression. The Islamic Republic of Iran has time and again communicated its stance on Kashmir to India. It has maintained that the rightful demands of the Kashmiri Muslims should be met and the oppression stopped. Equating the Kashmir issue with one of the many wounds on the body of Islam, the Supreme Leader has asserted that the Islamic Revolution will remain the voice of the voiceless and stand for the downtrodden.
It was the voice of the voiceless, and there's no doubt about that. In a time when people thought of communism as the savior of mankind, by being inspired by the revolutions that happened in Cuba, by the speeches and talks of Che Guevara, it was Imam Khomeini with his team of highly intellectual scholars like Rehber Mozam Imam Khamenei, like Shahid Muteri, in Iraq, Shahid Bahul Sadr, through which they identified the oppressors of that time. It wasn't normal for powers to speak up against arrogant powers. It wasn't something that you would see every day. The might of the United States had been established after World War II when they defeated Hitler and Nazi Germany. So right before the US, you had the British. They had a saying that said that the sun never sets on the British Empire. This is how strong these powers were. This is how strong the US was. This is how strong America used to be. This is how strong Russia was. Now Iran has good ties with Russia. But at that time, Russia, the second superpower of that time, and America were both against the Islamic Republic. Yet, right after the revolution, Imam Khomeini spoke up against these arrogant powers. He didn't just speak up against these arrogant powers. He fought an 8-year war, Difai Muqaddasa, against Saddam Hussein, who was backed by the Zionists. They were backed by the Zionists. They were backed by the US. There's not a shadow of a doubt in that. And what did Iran do? Iran showed the world that the solution is not to back down when an oppressor tries to oppress you. When a bully oppresses you, you don't back down, you fight back. You speak out against an oppressor. This was something that was unprecedented. It had never been seen before.
Iran has been the first Muslim country to let women face their political identity and shape them. This change in the position of women in the Islamic Republic has helped the Muslim women around the globe to be self-reliant and form their own identities. The Iranian woman who has carved a niche for herself globally is a source of motivation for the Muslim women of India, Pakistan and Bangladesh.
Women played a remarkable role in the success of the revolution. They acted as the vanguard of the movement and were instrumental in the triumph of the revolution. Through their participation in the movement, the women were shorn off their passivity and felt emancipated. For the first time in the Islamic history, women were given an equal chance to shape the past, present, and future of their lives. The sense of being equal in the revolution was liberating for the Muslim woman who till then had never actively participated in politics. The revolution taught that the status of a woman is dynamic and changes depending on what is needed most at the time. Bringing the real Islamic principles in practice, the religion has supported women's liberty and emancipation.
This impression that the arrogant Western powers have created about Muslim women, that they are oppressed in Islam, that they are oppressed in Muslim societies. It might be true when you look at countries like Saudi Arabia, where women have absolutely no rights. But it is Iran that has really gotten rid of this stigma that the Western powers have deliberately created against Muslim women. Just because Muslim women cover themselves and they are modest doesn't mean that they're not active in the social life, in their regular social lives. Women are extremely active. First of all, in Islam, as Imam Khamenei also mentioned, the toughest job for a woman is that of a mother, is that of a wife. It is a mother that creates geniuses like Shaheed Shamran. It is a mother that has given us a leader like Imam Khamenei, like Imam Khomeini. It is these mothers who have had the ability to sacrifice their children so that Muslims throughout the world can live with dignity. We see Shahida Bintul Huda, who was the sister of Shahid Baqir Sadr, inspired by the Islamic Revolution. We see the mother of Shahid Imad Mughniya, the mother of Shahid Jihad, the mother of Shahid Imad Mughniya, who was the mother of Shahid Imad, the grandmother of Shahid Jihad, who had given 7 of her children and her grandchildren in sacrifice, right? So, not only in that area, but on the other hand, in terms of teachers, in terms of nurses, doctors, women are extremely, in my experience going to Iran, I was shocked. I saw female drivers, female taxi drivers who were women. I saw women driving their own cycles and their own bikes, obviously covered modestly. The only requirement in Islam, in Islamic law, in an Islamic government, is that a woman dresses up in a dignified manner. Unfortunately, in Western society, they have this absurd concept that freedom comes from a woman dressing in vulgar clothes.
The narrative that Muslim women are helpless and on the mercy of Western powers was shunned by the revolution. According to different studies conducted on the Muslim women of the subcontinent, it has been found that they look for inspiration from Iranian women. The status that the women in Iran have been enjoying provides a goad for the women of the subcontinent to fight for their rights. The Muslim women of India, Pakistan, Afghanistan have been seeing Iranian women making significant gains within an Islamic framework.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Now to have more insight, we are joined by Mr. Zafar Bangash from Toronto. He is the director at the Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought. Thank you for joining us, sir. Now, Mr. Bangash, 44 years have passed since the victory of the Islamic Revolution. The zeal to celebrate the triumph of the revolution has not decreased. We have seen huge rallies being taken out to commemorate the occasion. So the question is, do the Muslims of the South Asian region see the Islamic Republic of Iran as a beacon of light for uniting the Muslims?
Muslims worldwide are celebrating the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. And this has had an enormous impact globally, in particular on the Muslims of the subcontinent. One of the most powerful messages that emanated from the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran was this message of unity. And naturally, it is extremely important at the present time because, regrettably, there are forces that are trying to divide the Muslims. But as a consequence of the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, Muslims in the subcontinent and indeed in the rest of the world have realized that unity is important for them to confront the challenges that they face in the world today. So in that sense, the message of Muslim unity has been very well received by the Muslims residing in the subcontinent, whether in Pakistan, India, Bangladesh, or the entire South Asian region.
Mr. Bangash, Imam Khomeini always reiterated that the revolution is not confined to just Iran, but is a voice of the voiceless globally. The Islamic revolution stood against the hegemony and by the side of the oppressed. So, to what extent has it helped the Muslims of the subcontinent to rise for their rights?
Before the victory of the Islamic revolution in Iran, there was quite a bit of confusion in the minds of people all over the world who viewed these hegemonic Western powers as countries that promoted human rights and human dignity and liberation struggles. But in fact, what emerged was, as a consequence of the struggle of the people of Iran, that these hegemonic powers' true faces were exposed to the rest of the world, whether in the subcontinent, in the West Asian region, or in Africa or South America. So as a consequence, what this did was to awaken the people to the true reality of the global situation, and thereby encouraged people to struggle for their rights to get rid of these hegemonic powers' control over their societies. True, the struggle has not been easy. A lot of sacrifices have had to be made. But this realization itself that these hegemonic powers have to be confronted and confronted effectively, as was witnessed in Iran, clearly demonstrated that if people are united, if they have sincere muttaki leadership, and that people are determined to achieve their true freedom, then that freedom can be achieved. And this is, of course, one of the great legacies of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, and the awareness that Imam Khomeini created among people that the Islamic Revolution is not just for the people of Iran, but it is the voice for the voiceless throughout the world. And this is a message that resonates throughout the world to this day, and people continue to struggle for their rights. In some places they have achieved their rights, in others they are continuing to struggle to achieve them.
Mr. Bangosh, talking about standing for your rights, the Islamic Republic of Iran has been under severe sanctions for almost the last 44 years. The country has set an example by thriving under extreme pressure. So how has it helped to build a self-reliant image of the Muslim country globally?
True, the Islamic Republic of Iran has faced tremendous pressure throughout these 44 years from the hegemonic powers, the self-proclaimed superpowers, and they have imposed all kinds of oppression, tyranny, sanctions, war, sabotage, assassinations, etc. But the Islamic Republic has withstood all these pressures and has come out ahead. And this has been a great inspiration for people throughout the world. And we see that there have been many liberation movements in the Muslim world, as well as in other parts of the world, for instance, in South America, that has for decades been declared America's backyard. Now there are countries that are standing up for their rights, such as in Venezuela or other places, that are determined to secure their rights and to overthrow the bullying tactics of the United States and its NATO allies. So Iran's example has definitely been an inspiration for people throughout the world. And this, I think, is a very good sign. And we are beginning to see the demise of the U.S. as a superpower, and the world is heading towards a multipolar world.
Last but not least, let's not forget about Kashmir. Standing against the oppression, the Islamic Republic has been supporting the Kashmir issue, and Kashmir has been showing its devotion to the principles of the revolution. So do you think the revolution has been able to give a new lease of life to people to unite and stand for their just demands?
You raised the issue of Kashmir, and I'm glad that you do so, because the people of Kashmir have suffered tremendously under Indian occupation and hegemony since 1947. But after the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, there was a new enthusiasm among the people of Kashmir, who in fact in 1989 staged an uprising, and that uprising continues to this day against the enormously oppressive forces of India, who have murdered approximately 100,000 people. They have violated the honor of women. They have imprisoned tens of thousands of Kashmiris, etc. But the Kashmiris definitely have sought inspiration from the Islamic Revolution in Iran. And in Kashmir, Muslims of different schools of thought are completely united in their quest for freedom and dignity from Indian hegemony. And this, of course, is as a result of the inspiration that many Kashmiri Muslims sought from the Islamic Revolution in Iran. And to this day, of course, Kashmiris observe various events, including the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. And that is a good omen for the people of Kashmir, as well as, incidentally, for the people of Palestine, for Syria, Yemen, Lebanon, and a number of other places. But Kashmir in particular has been inspired by the Islamic Revolution because it's right next door to Iran, and many Kashmiri leaders have visited the Islamic Republic of Iran to study it closely and to continue to seek inspiration.
On that note, I would like to thank Mr. Zafar Bangash from Toronto. He's a director at the Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought. Thank you for being on the program, sir. Now, let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Zainab writes in her Twitter, "Before Islamic Revolution, almost one-third of girls between 6 to 14 years old were deprived of education. From 1976 to 2016, the number of Iranian girls deprived of education decreased about 36%. Iran drafted a comprehensive bill on securing women against violence in 2016. Showing his admiration for the revolution, Rezwan Malik tweeted, "Imam Khomeini is alive. His resistance, his revolution is alive. His Islamic revolution of Iran is still haunting tyrants like U.S., Israel beyond Iranian borders." We Yan, commenting on the world order, commented, "Iran's Islamic revolution has spread to all over the world. Supporters of Islamic revolution are present in North and South America, Europe, the Middle East. The West knows the power of Islam. Thus, they are waging war on Iran overtly and covertly for 43 years, but couldn't harm Iran." Fatima tweeted about the revolution, said, "True, I think at present the world is moving in such a direction that can adopt only one lifestyle. And the Islamic revolution of Iran is gradually preparing the world to choose this lifestyle." Gulenargis tweeted, "Iran is a good country because 44 years ago it stood up to the world's superpower. And with the Islamic revolution, it not only gained independence and freedom, but it also serves as a model for all nations and people who do not want to be forced."
And that was our special episode on how the Islamic Revolution of Iran impacted the Muslims of the world, and in the South Asian region in particular, how the revolution helped the Muslim men and women fight for their identity, and the effect of the revolution on Kashmir. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take great care.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu Alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program, Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned.
حساب و کتاب برای همه نعمت‌های خداست.
Examining the record of our deeds is something related to all of the blessings that are given to us by Allah. This will also cover the not given things to us too. Therefore, one important dialogue between us and Allah takes place on the Day of Judgment. Yet another important dialogue of ours takes place in a grave as soon as we pass away. This is the time I ask Allah to return me to this world to compensate for my bad deeds.
چون آدم وقتی مرگ میاد چشماش باز میشه. همه اینا قرآنه.
When we die, our eyes become open to the realities of the world. On the first night of my death, inside the grave, I understand what was good for me and what was not in this world. Now, I regret why I couldn't help my neighbors, my friends, my colleagues, and I ask Allah to give me a second chance to get back to this world to do good deeds. But unfortunately, Allah's answer is negative because life in this world is only given once to all. As a result, we must dedicate ourselves to do good deeds in this world before leaving it to the other world. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
Islamic Revolution, Reviving Iranian Women's Identity. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, these days mark the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. If you remember, in two episodes, we talked about Iran's economic achievements after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, comparing them with the era of the tyrannical regime of the Shah. Today, we are going to have a look at the status of women and their achievements in Iran for the past four decades. Stay tuned, please. A short while ago, the enemy targeted our Faculty of Understanding with all its forces and facilities in a compound and cognitive war. Thus, in its wishful thinking, targeted the soil and civilization of the powerful Iran with illusions of female revolution. They said, in the name of woman, life and freedom. But they recognized neither the Iranian woman's identity nor her free spirit. In the ballyhoo of media war, the real voice of the Iranian woman was not heard. When the Iranian lady demonstrated the most beautiful and lasting roles on the cinema of the Islamic Revolution in an attire bequeathed from the ancestors, and when she flew proudly toward the world championship stand, and when she was researching on the greatest scientific issues in the world, her voice was not heard. The Iranian woman's voice was not heard because the Western civilization didn't want to accept woman's return to her original identity. The Iranian woman's voice was not heard because the New World Order didn't like to see a new thought of ruling, lifestyle, and civilization building. What you heard was part of the statement of the Iranian female artist who, as a representative of the Iranian women's community, announced that they are firmly committed to the dear flag of Iran and will never allow the ostentatious brouhaha of a handful of celebrities destroy the chaste and successful image of the Iranian woman. History bears witness that the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran started a new chapter of life and presence of women in society. The Islamic Republic of Iran is boastful of great achievements in granting identity to women. These achievements and successes are originated in the pure Islamic culture, which considers men and women equal according to their specific status and role in the system of creation. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, always emphasized on women's dignity and status, considering them as the source of growth and sublimity of communities and nations. The Imam was certain that if women keep their right and preserve their hijab and chastity, they will bring up pure and efficient men. He strongly maintained that if the women of a society are deviated from their divine role and status, they will fail to play the role of human building. Hence, communities will be corrupt and decadent. The father of the Islamic Revolution would stress women's participation in social affairs, but never let their chastity and dignity be violated. Late Ms. Marzieh Hadidchi, better known as Dabbagh, was an active woman who struggled alongside the Imam in the heat of the revolution. She was the commander of IRGC in Hamedan province for a while. Ms. Dabbagh was also a member of parliament for some period and taught at university and rendered other services in various organizations. She was the only lady of the three-member delegation sent by Imam Khomeini to Moscow in early 1990 to deliver the Imam's historical message to the Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev. According to the Islamic teachings, man and woman are equal, but the role is definitely different in family and society based on their physical and psychological differences. Ayatollah Khamenei says, "The power of faith opened in the way of greater struggles for women and created astonishing and unique scenes of their brave, sacrificial and innovative presence in tough fields. From fervent demonstrations of the days of revolution to the unforgettable era of the Holy Defense, from championship in the rows of battle to abandoning children and husband and sending them towards danger to services behind the fronts, from presence in the front of sciences, research and technology, and radiation in the domain of literature and art, to artistic participation in social, political, and managerial arenas. And finally, self-sacrifice in the field of health and rendering services to patients in the recent perilous tribulation. All of these are the signs of spiritual sublimity of the Iranian woman, which has emerged with the blessings of the Islamic system and the lessons and values determined by Islam." A new book titled 40-Year Ascension has reviewed the successes of the Islamic Revolution during four decades, according to the global statistics. Before the revolution, only 6% of the university graduates were women, while the figure has reached almost 50%. In the current Iranian calendar year, more than 60% of participants of university entrance exam were female. Before the victory of the Islamic Revolution, almost no one of the university professors was female, while this has grown to 21%. Dr. Fahime Farahmandpour, a member of the scientific board of Tehran University, says, "I am one of the thousands of university teachers who have been trained in the Islamic Republic." Professor Zahra Imam Jom'e is a scholar whose name has been registered in the list of the Asian Scientific Centers. She teaches as the youngest Iranian professor. "The Islamic Revolution was successful in training 100,000 female physicians, many of whom are specialists and subspecialists in a variety of medical branches." Today, there are hundreds of social establishments in Iran that are presided and run by women. They include social assistance, support for parentless families, financial assistance, charity funds, and so on. Women are active in elections too. Even some of the officials of the electoral headquarters are female. Women have a prominent presence at media, so that approximately 70% of media activists are young women. As in the sports domain, Iranian Muslims have shown a bright participation both inside the country and abroad in various fields. Before the revolution, Iranian women had garnered only 5 medallions, and that in the Asian competitions, while they were forced to remove their hijab during the matches. This while today Iranian ladies are active in 130 sports fields and have gained nearly 200 medallions in various fields of sports. Moreover, Iranian women have been successful in sports-affiliated fields too. For instance, Paria Shahriari has entered the FIFA base as the first Iranian lady. She has been the manager of Iran's beach football committee for 19 years. Tony Grant, a critic of feminism, writes, "Today it seems that women have become only independent, but emotionally they are often more needful, insecure, shaky, lonely, and destitute than their mothers and grandmothers."
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. This is Zainab, and today we're going to discuss something very important with Professor Naqavi. Professor Naqavi is a faculty member at Al Mustafa University. Dear listeners, in this program, we try to answer your questions and issues that you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations from Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified progeny. Well, Professor Naqavi, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Well, Professor Naqavi, in our previous episode, we said that parents, when staying in front of their children, especially of opposite gender, they need to be very modest in terms of their clothing especially. But you actually expanded this point. You said it's not just clothing, it's the way you walk, the way you talk, your tones, your everything should be very, very modest. Even if it's your mahrams, even if it's your children, or even if it's your parents who are from opposite gender, we gotta take care of modesty in each and everything. Well, there's one thing that parents often do in front of their children is that they make jokes. They talk everything casual, whatever they want to, because home is like home. They feel it's home, it's safe, it's free, and they try to be more casual. But is it important to take care of the conversations in front of your children?
Certainly. I mean, as far as the content goes, it should be, again, maintaining the respect and dignity of human beings themselves, those who are conversing, who are speaking, and also the person whom they are talking to. Of course. But that should not be, of course, at the expense of the casual way that you're mentioning. You can't have a discussion in the household just as you're having a discussion at the office. It's not going to be an office meeting, is it? It has to be casual. It has to be It should be in a very lighter mode. It doesn't have to be some sort of meeting or discussion which you just where you are just trying to inform or try to teach even your children or your spouse about what has to be done. It should not be some formal type of education. It should be very informal. It should be very in a lighter mood, in a lighter tone. But it should not, of course, cross certain boundaries.
So there are boundaries.
Of course. I mean, the words that you use an employee should not be words which are used by lower levels of society. Slang words should be avoided. Words which are full of mudslinging or show dishonor to anyone, abusing anyone, using words, even sometimes name calling should not be there, because someone is short, we say, oh, shorty, or
tall.
I mean, the name calling should not be there. We shouldn't be name calling. We should not be abusing. We should not be backbiting people in front of our children.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be talking badly about others who are not there. So, of course, many things, there are things which can come out of our tongues which create a difficult situation. They are sins in themselves, and they create a very bad impact on our children. So certainly
in your talks, basically, when you're abusing someone else without any intention of, like, you don't even know, does it have impact on your child or not? But it is playing an important part in his upbringing.
Certainly. I mean, if he gets used to such
terms
and words which are not used in a healthy society, in a society where there's respect and love for each other. Unfortunately, we think that if we are using such words, we are showing our closeness and proximity, our love for the other person. If we use abusive words, it's becoming a trend in many places. The more abusive the language you use, we feel that we're more close to each other. We are more
casual. Yeah. We'll discuss more on that topic after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. This is IRIB English Radio. I'm Zainab with Professor Naqavi. And we're discussing something very important related to upbringing. Well, Professor Naqavi, we are talking about conversations that have to be managed, that have to be controlled. You said the more we try to be casual, the more we feel actually we are being casual. We never know it's having an impact on our children. It's playing a role in their upbringing, and it's shaping them one or the other way.
Exactly. So we need to be able to express our feelings and our thoughts in a very lucid manner, in a very clear manner, avoid using words and terms which are not appropriate. And certainly children, especially small children, they can't cope up with abstract issues. They cannot cope up with generalizations. They need vivid examples. So you should be good at storytelling.
Okay.
Open truths, talk about personalities, relate to them, your own experiences or the experiences of your parents or the good experiences of your members of society who can become role models for their children. So we need to talk about, we need to express our ideas in forms which are concrete. I mean, when you listen to someone on the pulpit and he is talking about very dry issues, nobody's listening. But the moment he starts expressing or talking about the story of Prophet Yusuf alayhi salam in the Quran, it becomes a very lively event.
Okay.
So why are our children attracted towards
animation
and whatever? So if we want to, either we're not good at it, then we need to show them animations and pictures and films which are talking about such things. But unfortunately, the number of such films is lesser than the films that are of another nature. So we need to be good at expressing our own experiences or the experiences of the positive experiences of others, relate to our children, talk about history, talk about culture, give them an expansive view of what's happening in life today, innovations, the world today, what's happening today, innovations upon innovations. I mean, talk about the future. How do we want this future to be like? How do we, I mean, you should be talking about values and ideals, but in forms which are the children can understand. They have to be, like you see what the Quran does, it talks about the holy prophets, it talks about very beautiful...
The history,
gives role models, relates the story, and within the story, the moral is also given.
Exactly, indeed.
So this
in
is
fact,
how
in
we...
every surah, there's kind of a disease is mentioned and the cure is also mentioned.
So if we want, for example, at bedtime, if our children are used to bedtime stories, before they go off to sleep, they listen to a good story about the Holy Prophet or the Imams or the Prophets and then goes to sleep, that would give him a very beautiful
relief.
Relief, and he would be dreaming about these things.
Exactly. Because psychology also proves that whatever you have been thinking throughout the day, or whatever you have been doing before sleep, that's something you usually see at night. We'll discuss more on the topic after a short break. The listeners, stay tuned with us.
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "A righteous child is indeed a flower from the flowers of paradise."
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. This is IRIB English Radio. I'm Zainab with Professor Nakavi. One of the beautiful things that your conversation is reminding me of is the beautiful poems that Lady Fatima Zahra Salaamaleha used to recite for Imam Hassan Alayhi. So whenever she used to first of all call Imam Ali Alayhi, she would call him with beautiful names. She would often call him with Ya Abul Hassan. And the most respected and the most beautiful names, which also show respect plus closeness. But today, we are trying to use the names, the very short or... For example, if there's some big name, we try to cut it short or we try to actually dissect it one or the other way, trying to show our casualness, and that casualness somewhere gets disrespect. But we have to learn from Lady Fatima, who is giving respect as well as expressing her closeness. Especially in her poems with her children, she's teaching Imam Hassan al-Islam that, "Oh Hassan, we like your father," in her poems. So that's so beautiful. She's taking care of a child, and at the same time, she's taking care of her husband, and she's expressing love for him.
Yes, that's very good. So, I mean, as I said, we should be able to communicate, and we should learn to communicate. So the learning is coming together with the managing of the children. Again, it's not just speaking out properly, it's also being a good listener. You should be able to listen to what your child is saying. From the very beginning, from early childhood, even when he goes to school, for example, he goes out with his friends, he should be taught to relate to you what he has experienced.
Indeed.
At school. So that has two positive aspects. One aspect is that he is capable. You know what's happening in the day, what's he doing, what's he up to. And he relates to you, he confides in you, you become his friend, and then you mildly point out anything which may have need to be rectified or corrected in a very subtle manner. And again, The important thing is that a child would learn how to evaluate what he's been doing in the daytime. So because one of the things which have been stressed upon and emphasized as Muslims for us is that before we go to sleep, we should be able to evaluate what we've been doing in the daytime and to, you know, make a resolve that we won't be repeating those mistakes which we have done in the day, for example, or we have set for ourselves targets to achieve in the day. So we need to be able to carry out the accountability before going to sleep. So if a child is taught to relate to the parent before going off to sleep, what's been happening all the day. So in the future, when he becomes a grown-up, he knows how to, you know, carry out that that muhasabatun nafs, which is very important. And we have traditions which emphasize the fact that anyone who does not carry out that accountability every day is not amongst us.
Yeah.
So to be a true follower of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, we need to set for ourselves targets and objectives and need to be able to evaluate them.
Exactly. Professor, you said a very beautiful quote in our previous episodes while this accountability also came in. I want you to repeat that for our listeners.
The PDCA?
Yeah.
So we need to plan. We need to carry the things out. Plan, do, check, and adjust. And I relate this with the terminology which was used by our sages previously in Arabic. They used to say musharata. You should condition yourself.
Yeah.
You should make conditions with yourself that today or tomorrow I'm going to carry out this.
Yeah.
I need to. This is my tomorrow's or my weekly objectives are such. So that's conditioning ourselves and planning and conditioning ourselves for carrying out a day or a week or a month or a year. And then muraqabah, we have to be very attentive to the fact when we are carrying that thing out.
Yeah,
that is very important. Whatever we do with attention, with the sincerity of purpose and action. Muraqaba is from Raqib. Raqib is to, someone is watching upon us. We should be always aware of the fact that Allah Almighty is watching upon us.
Is all aware, all watching.
Then checking is muhasaba, accountability. And then adjusting, mu'ataba, repenting and making amends to things which we have done wrong.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Professor, for coming and sharing such beautiful things with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.